This is the Canucks Central Postgame Show.
Front. Kuzmenko scores! Wide open, what a pass from Pettersson to get it to him in the middle of the ice. And Andre Kuzmenko scores his second of the game to pull the Canucks to within one. It's 5-4. Miller gets it free to Joshua. Now to Besser, near circle, back to the line for Hughes. He scores! Teed it up for the top of the point, and the Canucks tie the game in the final minute of the third period.
With the instant reaction from the players and coaches.
Drops to Braden Shen. Front for Brana, he scores! Beautiful passing play off the rush, and Jacob Brana scores his second of the night to win it for the Blues.
On the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Canucks lose in overtime against St. Louis Blues. An exciting hockey game, 6-5 victory for the Blues. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar. Keep your thoughts coming in to our text inbox, 650-650. You can grab a phone line as well, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. And before we bring Randeep into the conversation, Bick, I mean, you know, the St. Louis Blues love blowing leads against the Vancouver Canucks. The last time these two teams met, the Blues had a 2-goal lead heading into the third. They blew it.
Kuzmenko
scored the tying goal in the final minute of the game, final 30 seconds of the game.
So when Ray worked through all the contact, right?
Yes, he goes through the contact, gets in it, and ties the game. And then this game, the Blues had a 3-goal lead in the second. The Canucks brought in within two before the second period came to an end. And believe it or not, the Blues give up another last-minute tying goal, but they hold on to win this one in overtime. And, you know, I was joking on social media and to you, but, you know, boy, picking up Jacob Varana for a team in the tank, that's really ruining your tank right now, ruining your high draft pick. All right, let's bring in Randeep into the conversation.
And do Randy, we got him?
I think we got Randeep ready right now. Let's bring him in.
After I took that stray at the end of the broadcast there. Buonasera. What have I ever done to make you treat me so disrespectfully, Randy?
I was giving you props, man. You're working those spreadsheets like nobody's business. Come on. That was a salute. That was a
Luca
Brasi respecting the dawn kind of moment. What are you talking about?
He's showing a lot of love. That's what he's doing here. But I mean, you know, I don't know if it was the Canucks pushing the comeback or the Blues allowing the Canucks to come back into this game. How did you see that third?
I definitely think there was a push by the Canucks, but who allowed it? Yeah, the Blues. And this is one of the things that we've seen from this team over the last little bit. The Blues are a team that has been winning, and they've gotten some, you know, decent goaltending from Joel Hofer when he was up outside of that game against LA. But really, the last two games, they have been extremely permissive, and that showed later on in this game where Vancouver was in a position after having a very bad second period to obviously bring a more sustained push in the second half of that third period, guys. But beyond that, you know, I think credit to the star players of Vancouver for stepping up at the right time. Kuzmenko getting that unbelievable pass from Elias Pettersson to finish off the play. And Quinn Hughes, you know, all that talk about shooting and wanting to shoot more, he didn't start off the year doing that, but you started to see those numbers really creep up and getting the puck on net. And that last, you know, goal that they ended up scoring was another example where another 4 shots on goal from Quinn Hughes. So to me, I think the star players definitely made a push from Vancouver. But let's be honest, the St. Louis Blues extremely permissive right now with the way they're defending.
Yeah, the whole game just felt like one of those games that Rick Tocchet has been wanting to avoid. River hockey, you know, I think that's a term we might hear in the post-game availability from Rick Tocchet, because you know, on the weekend when they had played those games that were very low event against Dallas and Chicago, you know, I know people are frustrated with the wins and everything, but at least it's the type of hockey that can translate to next year. This is the type of game nobody really wants to see. Of just, yeah, there's goals, but you're not even buying into what you're trying to preach and what you're trying to sell. This is the type of hockey that it's entertaining, but it's not necessarily effective hockey. Like, this is the type of game that if this is what we had seen for 3 weeks, we'd say this won't carry over to next year.
Yeah, this was hopefully a one-off for the Canucks, but the Dallas Stars versus Vancouver on Saturday, this was not. This was a moment where you're looking at, you know, especially that second period, guys. The first Jacob Varana goal, the Besser giveaway along the boards, passes right to Brandon Saad. That's a bad play, bad puck management. You look at the 4-2 goal, which I know it wasn't maybe Thatcher Demko's greatest moment. Maybe he wants that one back. But Thomas is given a lot of room to operate there. And the penalty by Dakota Joshua wasn't a great one in the offensive zone. And then after that, Buchnevich, bad Tyler Myers pinch, puts Elias Pettersson in a bad spot. So some of those good habits that we've seen from the Canucks, they went back on them, especially in that second period. So, this is something that I'm sure Rick Tocchet coming back to Vancouver, he's going to have some practice time here as the next five-game homestand is coming up, the final five-game homestand of the season. And there's going to be a few things to work on here where you have a lot of positives on this road trip, but giving up six goals and going back to some of those habits, I'm sure the coach and his coaching staff are going to focus on those things and righting those wrongs, because it was, even though it was an exciting game from a coach's perspective, I don't think they like very much of it.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of things they would want to criticize, but also I don't think Thatcher Demko was on tonight. I mean, there was some river hockey. We talked about some of the chances, but it wasn't like it was onslaught after onslaught tonight either. And Demko, and he had a clean look on a number of those shots, and they just beat him clean as well. He wasn't quite as sharp as we've seen through his stretch since returning to the lineup.
Yeah, he's been excellent since he's been back, but I go back to that Robert Thomas goal where there's not a screen to be had, right? And Thomas is a skilled player. There's no question about it. He's one of the young stars on that team. But if you look at that, that's an open shooting lane. There's not a body in sight. There's not a Canuck player or a St. Louis Blues player. So if you're looking at, was Thatcher Demko maybe on the top of his game? No, he wasn't. Anytime you give up six goals, you're not there. But there's one or two goals, maybe even the Falk one. Watching the replay on that, I think there was a bit of a screen on that one, if I'm not mistaken. But I look back at the power play goal that Robert Thomas scored, and that one is, I'm sure Thatcher, if he's speaking to media today, will probably look back and say, yeah, there's probably one or two goals that I should have had. I should have made a save on.
Dakota Joshua getting his opportunity higher up in the lineup and featured a lot in, him making plays. Your thoughts on what he did being next to Elias Pettersson?
Yeah, I liked early on in this game, especially where, stripping Colton Parayko of the puck and, creating a chance for Pettersson, who was driving the middle of the ice. A little bit later on, just creating a little bit of havoc in front of the net. Later on in the game, we saw him, use that long reach on Nick Leddy to be aggressive as the first forward in. So some of those things that you want to see with players that play alongside Elias Pettersson. Now, the question I have about Dakota Joshua is he had two or three opportunities in this game in tight where, the puck's coming to him. Can he finish in time? And I know he got that one assist, but those hands in and around the net, if you're going to be playing with Elias Pettersson, if you're going to be playing with Andre Kuzmenko and you get those opportunities, or you're in a position to battle in front of the net, and have a chance to knock in one of those rebounds, you're going to be relied on. That's what playing in the top six means. So good start. I'd like to see a little bit more of it because I think he has the right habits. I think he has the right, mindset and obviously the physique for it. But the question I have is, are those hands quick enough? Can he make those plays quick enough? And so far tonight, there's a couple of plays, especially that opportunity in the second period where you could see he was looking up to the heavens and saying, how did I miss that? I'd like to see him finish one or two of those, because that's the difference, right? If you're playing with the big boys, you got to produce, you got to score those goals when those opportunities come up.
Well, how about Elias Pettersson? Extends his point streak now to 13 games, two more points tonight. And I don't think it was, the cleanest game for any Royal Canucks tonight overall. But in that third period, especially the chemistry between Kuzmenko and Elias Pettersson, it just seems like every game he's got something in store for us right now.
Man, what a pass. Honestly, if you look at, the way they do a give and go, but that's not your orthodox give and go, which is a
angle
looking
on
at you. It's just unbelievable, right? Where this is a guy that two assists again, he plays just shy of 20 minutes, and now we start talking about 13 straight games with a point. He's two games off the franchise record that is set by Peter Nedved and Todd Bertuzzi. Shout to Darcy Rota, who's done it 14 as well. But silently, quietly doing his thing. But in every single game, you'll have a moment like that where he makes a pass and you're saying, how did he do that? He had a moment in the first period where he makes a backhand pass from behind the net, and that almost connects with Kuzmenko for a goal. So I think, when we start to see his defensive play, we see his offensive play, but now you're starting to see him rack up these numbers where still on pace for, 106 points over the season. That is something special. Now, the focus that this team has for the rest of the year is obviously, you want to build those good habits. But guys, this just reinforces the point of How do you build around him and Quinn Hughes? They're doing special things right now. You got to make sure that you have those players around them that are going to make them better and that can finish. Kuzmenko's done his part, no question. Another couple of goals tonight. But how do you keep on building players to occupy those roles that you have a – when you talk about having a first line and, you know, a really good first line at that, you got to keep on finding these players that can play alongside Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes. So I'm just wowed by him every time I watch him play, but it also reinforces the point. You got to bring in more special players, good players that can play with the special players and be on that same wavelength.
So this is going to be a bit interesting, but JT was on the ice for four of the Blues' goals. And he ends up a minus one. He was on the ice for that OT goal. But I actually think he had a decent defensive night. Is that fair?
Yeah, I didn't notice too much bad, actually. There was I know when you're on the ice, you're looking at that. And I would agree with that statement because there's a couple defensive plays where he's dropping back deep.
Mm-hmm.
He's making a play. He's doing a, you know, the back check in the second period was a classic example of that. But even beyond that, where I actually saw more good than bad, and sometimes the numbers – do, you know, if you're on the ice, you're on the ice. That's the reality
yeah.
of the situation. But, you know, four takeaways in that game, 58% in the faceoff circle. I look at those numbers to say I actually liked his game. And if you didn't tell me, you know, or if we didn't have that stat of him on the ice for, you know, four of those goals, I actually thought he played a pretty good defensive game as far as the eye test is concerned.
Yeah, I mean, I thought there were a number of players who had some good moments. I did think there were a number of players who also had some bigger struggles. I thought Quinn Hughes was a bit more uncharacteristic. Do we think maybe mm-hmm. some of the increased load of ice time? Because he made a couple of uncharacteristic mistakes, a bit slower coming back on a couple of different occasions. And really, when we break this game down, almost every breakdown the Canucks had ended up with a goal in the back of their net. Like, if you look at the game, that's kind of what happened here tonight. But I do think defensively, too, we've seen Myers be a bit better. He was back to being a bit more chaotic tonight. It just seemed like those big mistakes were kind of just creeping up. And a lot of those mistakes were happening by some of the more veteran players tonight.
Yeah, there were definitely those mistakes. I think puck management was an issue as well. And I know the Canucks have been only credited with five giveaways, but I felt like a lot more than that, where there's, you know, opportunities that are coming from, hey, bad decisions being made with the puck. They're not strong on the puck. There's, you know, maybe taking a moment too long to make that decision. Passes were not crisp. And when you talk about defensive breakdowns, yeah, Quinn Hughes, I think there was a couple of moments where you're saying, okay, he's just, that pass is not landing. That pass is not as accurate as we've seen it. In another game where he's played 28 minutes, plus 28 minutes, this is, you know, you're chasing a game, you want your best players out there, but guys, it's also March 28th, right? This team's not going to the playoffs, so, you know, I understand the coach's mindset of trying to win every single game, but I felt like today, you know, this was an example of where Quinn Hughes, maybe at the end of a road trip where he's played a lot, he was feeling it tonight. 3 points, offensively great, but still maybe not the crispest passing as we've seen, and he was still doing special things out there, you know, setting up Kuzmenko with that great behind-the-back pass, the backhand pass from, you know, behind the net to Kuzmenko. There's other opportunities, doing really special things, but was his overall game as crisp as we've seen? Probably not. And I think that does come down to fatigue. It eventually takes a toll on you. And, you know, Hronek ends up the night with just shy of 24 minutes. But remember, this is an entire season of Quinn Hughes playing 25 and a half minutes per game. For a guy that is exceptional, the best defenseman wore down after a full season of that.
Yeah, and that's just the reality, right? I mean, the amount of ice time, and it's a different challenge. And this is one of the questions you had about throwing guys out there a lot, and ultimately we'll see how that all unfolds the rest of the season. Randy, great stuff calling the game alongside Brendan Batchelor, and we'll see what the Canucks have in store for us on Friday when they're back on home ice again.
All right, boys, enjoy the couple of days you have here. See you on Friday.
Yeah, you got it. That's Randy Janda. Calling the game alongside Brendan Batchelor here tonight. And, you know, when we talk about the Vancouver Canucks and, you know, where they find themselves now in the standings, and I think that's something to kind of look at here now, Bick, because we mentioned this during the intermission. Had the Canucks lost in regulation, they'd be in sole possession of eighth worst in the National Hockey League. But as it stands, they're now in ninth worst.
Yes.
Yes.
I was just working that in my head. But yeah.
The Blues now have the tiebreaker over Vancouver. They have the same amount of points and the same amount of games played.
So they have 6% draft lottery odds.
Six.
After tonight.
A whole 6%. We'll take it.
Flyers are 4 points behind the Canucks for the 6.5% because we're competing for every point here. But Flyers have a game in hand, I believe, after tonight. Yes, they do. So Flyers have a game in hand on the Vancouver Canucks.
Yes.
So if they win, they'll still be under 500. So a couple of results need to go right for the Philadelphia Flyers before they can track down the Vancouver Canucks. But I believe the Flyers have a decent schedule coming up. I'm just trying to pull it up here. But I do remember looking at it. They play Ottawa on Thursday. They play Buffalo on Saturday coming up. Pittsburgh, St. Louis for the next four games. So there's some potential W's there. But then they play Dallas, Islanders, Boston, Columbus, Chicago in the season.
Yeah.
So, again, it's going to be pretty tight amongst these teams here.
Yeah, it'll be a bit tight here, right? And I mean, even the next team the Canucks are playing is the Calgary Flames. They're still trying to keep their slim playoff hopes alive. Currently have a lead on the LA Kings as well. So it may not be the easiest next little stretch here for Vancouver. They lost to the Blues here tonight. They have the Calgary Flames coming up next. And then obviously they have the LA Kings and the Seattle Kraken. And then after that, it does kind of lighten up again. So the Canucks close it out against Chicago, Calgary, LA, Anaheim, and Arizona. But these next three games after tonight, we'll see how the Canucks fare against three teams that are still fighting and clawing for playoff positioning and a playoff position. We'll get to more of your text messages, 650, 650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650. You're toll free, 1-888-275-0650. Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar. We'll get back to more right here on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Now more of the Canucks Central post-game show. Join the discussion. Text us at 650-650 or call us at 604-280-0650. This is the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Robert, he scores! Beautiful passing play off the rush, and Jacob Vrana scores his second of the night to win it for the Blues.
The Blues go on to win 6-5 in overtime over the Vancouver Canucks. They coughed up a three-goal lead in the second period, which they held. Canucks came back to tie it in the final minute of the third to force overtime. But the Blues hang on to win this one 6-5 on home ice. And this is the Canucks Central postgame show on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar. Keep your thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can grab a phone line, 604-280-0650. You're toll free, 1-888-275-0650. A lot of reaction on the text inbox. And this one here says, Myers and Besser on the ice together in OT, really? That is Dee and Abbotsford texting in. And this one says, poor Chaos Giraffe got a bit confused in overtime. I was surprised, too, to see Myers out there to start overtime. And maybe it is because Hronek and Quinn were playing quite a bit and looked a little bit more fatigued, both those guys here tonight. But that was a bit of a noteworthy decision. And having Besser out there was not the fleetest guy either. It was a bit curious.
Puzzling personnel decision making.
And you know, Marco and Renfro was texting into us earlier today and saying that the Habs were trying to tank by having two defensemen in the shootout. Well, I won't get into the whole thing, but regardless, there were two, and he's like, the Canucks would never try to tank. It's like, well, was that maybe a tank
move? There you go.
There you go, Marco.
Congratulations, Marco. You manifested a tanking strategies in OT. Congratulations.
There we go.
That was Marco's whole day.
It was all day, just, you know. Tanking. There are teams that are trying to lose. So maybe Rick Tocchet, listen, we just, of course.
Manifested it. Put that energy towards the lottery.
Yes, manifest that energy. Torgi says, I think we showed some promise. No team is sharp every night, let alone a team who's been so far out of the playoffs for so long. Next game will show more. Tonight's a write-off. Couldn't have picked a better game to no-show. I like it. LOL, that's Torgi texting it.
I don't know if I agree with that one.
I think it's more about, hey, we'll take the loss if it helps us with the draft lottery odds.
But, you know, this is the type of hockey you don't want to see carry over.
No, and I will say this, like, and maybe it's because the Blues had the three-goal lead, but it's not like the Blues did much after the second. Like, it was pretty much it. Like, in the third, the Blues did nothing. Some score effects there, but the Canucks came back and tied it. Like,
sure, but you just said it's like the Blues had a three-goal lead.
They did.
Like, that's a problem.
And they're pretty bad, and they coughed it up. And then,
That's a problem. This one, Nate from Comox. Sat saying Demko hasn't been on like usual. Good teams don't need the goalie to always be top level. Same team needs everything to go right. come on, this is the same old team. Don't get fooled, Nate from Comox, 650.
Well, now that Nate told us not to get fooled, I'm definitely not going to get fooled anymore. I was worried about it earlier, but now that I've been told. I mean, a little nuance, please, everybody.
This isn't the game. Again, this isn't the game that I would look at and say it's going to carry over.
A little bit
of
nuance.
Is every game going to look the same that they've had here in the last 20? No, but basically since, I would say, the Philly game, it's been fine.
Fine. Yeah, and like, I don't think any of us have said the Canucks have figured it out and they're playing at a top 10 level. Like, even today we were talking, yesterday you and Reach were talking about the defensive improvements, and there have been improvements, mm-hmm. but they're not these leaps and bounds into the top 10, top half of the league improvements. They're improvements that take you out of the
bottom. Where they were.
Right. And they are tangible, and there are things that you can look at structurally and say from habits and standards that, okay, these are things you want to have, and if this carries over next year, that's a positive. But nobody, at least none of us here, have ever sat and told you that the Canucks are playing like a good hockey team that have everything figured out. They have loads to do with their roster. They have a lot of things they have to do to take that next step as a team. But they have been playing better, and it has been more than just relying on goaltending. But again, nuance. A lot of things are true at the same time here. The Canucks would not have won or picked up points in 11 out of their last 13 games if it wasn't for Thatcher Demko. So that's absolutely true. Goaltending has been a huge part of it, but they have been better. And here's the third thing that's also true at the same time. They have a long way to go before they're a really good team next season.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, the mistakes that were made tonight were some of the depth pieces that made some mistakes tonight. And that's why we sat here and said improvement still needs to happen.
Well, yeah.
You still need to acquire players that push guys like Guillaume Brisebois down the depth chart.
100%.
And look, that's no knock on Guillaume Brisebois. He's done fantastic. And honestly, like, I know I've been harping on this, but I'm turning into a big fan because he just shuts up and does his job. Again, yeah. for as long as he's been in the organization, we never hear anything about him. You need him in a pinch at the end of the season. He's there for you. Earns his contract. He's nice AHL depth. I'm a big fan of all things Guillaume Brisebois can bring, but I want him to bring what he can bring, not something that he can't bring.
Exactly. And I think you can't expect him to be something he wasn't. Tyler says, you mean Rick couldn't manifest his superpowers against a team not in the bottom 10? Again, let's be fair. Nobody's said that the Canucks have figured things out. They have played better. But if you want to use that and say, oh, they haven't beat any good teams. Well, during the stretch where they've won 10 of their last 13 games, they beat Toronto and they beat the Dallas Stars twice. And in those games against those three teams, they outplay their opposition. And those are
and they
good
beat
teams.
The LA Kings.
And they beat the LA Kings. But I'm talking about, like, you know, those are teams people looked at and said, you know, contending type of hockey teams this year, right? And yes, you put LA in that discussion to beat them in a shootout. Those four games, even the Vegas game, they came back. They weren't horrible that game. There's a good competition. Again, it's just about being fair. It's just about being fair. That's all we're trying to do here. Keep your thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. Brandon in Vancouver, they were overdue for a sloppy game and an off night from Demko and Brandon and Poco. At least you guys aren't tanking to get a high broadcasting draft pick. Or are you? That's a question mark.
I don't know. I think we already tanked. Ben's behind the glass.
Ben,
Josh
poor
is
Ben.
In. I'm saying that's the reward.
Oh,
not poor Ben.
Oh,
yeah, like, yeah, we already okay, tanked.
I thought you meant
we,
like,
got Ben now behind the glass.
We sent Josh home.
We got Josh.
Ben, like,
oh, yeah, no, we're crushing it, man.
We're crushing it, man. We got a bright future here.
Retooled on the fly, I would say.
Listen, there's a 10-year deal, and you got young prospects coming up. It's been all gravy at Sportsnet 650.
Signed a 10-year deal.
All right. Keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox. We'll get to more of those. We are going to get to head coach Rick Tocchet as soon as that becomes available. But let's also go to the phone board, 604-280-0650, your toll free 1-888-275-0650. Let's go to Maple Ridge, where we have our friend Gary on the line. Gary, thanks for calling in. What do you have for us tonight?
I still can't believe I'm the first one to call you or first person to get on. I am. You've been talking about JT Miller. You've talked about Myers. I want to talk about a number six, Brock Besser. Four goals, he's got a reasonably good shot, but in the, I believe it was the first period, third goal, Demko puts it behind him and gets to Brock Besser. Besser has two people with him. He doesn't fight very hard. It goes out in the front of the net, bang, it's in the net. Overtime goal, both JT Miller and Brock Besser, and I believe Myers were on the ice, and I believe you guys have been talking about that. And Brock Besser skates like it's an all-star game and lets the guy go right by him, doesn't even put a stick on him, and it's in the net. Now, I'm not Brock Besser, I don't know what's going on with him. He doesn't like the corners. I know he has a good shot. I know he gets involved occasionally, but occasionally for $6.5 million bucks a season or a year isn't good enough. I would like to see him get traded and see us get another guy that actually likes to get involved. What do you think? And by the way, great show. I really appreciate the producer letting me on. Thanks.
Hey, you got it. That's Gary in Maple Ridge calling in, giving love to our producer, Ben Bastron, who's taking your phone calls as well. 604-280-0650. On Brock Besser, I mean, wasn't...
It's a constant conversation.
Wasn't tonight the perfect encapsulation of his season?
Yes.
Like, I don't think Gary was wrong.
3 points for Brock.
3 points, right? And he wasn't wrong in some of the plays. Like, we broke down that goal that happened on the Demko turnover, which was, I think it was the third goal?
The Vrana goal,
right? The third goal of the game that happened in the second period.
Vrana, two goals, ruining the tank.
Ruining the tank big time. So... I don't like that play, you know, eat that puck, and there's a couple other instances, but he also does the good things offensively. He still finds a way to get a goal tonight, has 3 points on the evening, now up to 52 points on the season. But I don't think this game was any different from what his season's been like, which is, obviously he's productive, he's scoring points this year, not the goal scoring, although that's coming along now up to 16 goals on the season, getting closer and closer to that 20-goal mark, but he's picking up assists, and a lot of primary assists as well. And now the fact that he's crested 50 points again... These are not insignificant things, but it's the same story with Besser. Some good, some bad. We're still waiting for him to put it together.
It's production, but I imagine harping on the details is going to be an important message from Rick Tocchet. Because, you know, we were talking the other day that those types of plays along the boards, they happen so often, and they're not flashy. But the reason they're valuable is because the risk vastly outweighs the reward. You screw it up, it ends up in the middle of the ice in the defensive zone, and there's going to be a high scoring chance. But you make the play, it's just connecting
a play or holding on to a puck.
That's
all
it is.
Nobody notices anything. Nobody even talks about it.
Nobody cares, but like that's why it's called a value play to Rick Tocchet. That's why he's like you get that stuff right. It just helps us get to the other end. You get that stuff wrong, it's one up on the scoreboard, and we're pulling it out of our net, and that's what they're trying to avoid, and it's a risky, it's a tough play. That's why those plays are so important, and that's why we talk about someone like Dakota Joshua who's having success right now in a role, winning along the boards, and that's why he's getting thrust up the lineup. But this was, a prototypical Brock Besser game this season. 3 points, which is great.
For the bottom line,
beef up the box score. But there are frustrations, and there's a lot of frustrations on Brock's game coming into the inbox, 650.
Well, and that's why I think a lot of it is empty calorie production, because you're getting the points, but it comes with a lot of mistakes that go the other way. So it's like, how much are you really coming out ahead? But yeah, a lot of reaction on text inbox, 650, 650. This one, Austin and Langley, jokes per 60. Playoffs are back on, baby. Wow. Weow, getting my car flag ready. That's Austin and Langley.
Yeah, there was a mood swing from some texters there in the last 15 minutes of that game.
Demko channeled his inner Spencer Martin tonight, was one text message. Not a lot of criticism from Demko since returning to the lineup, but obviously tonight, not the sharpest for the netminder.
Eddie and Kitt's team tank going crazy, draft spot plummeting. Actually, they improved their draft odds tonight. But Eddie did send that one in right when the the game was tied. So
there was a lot of back and forth emotions. Lester, the Qualicum Sparky. Boys played with heart, good comeback. Tyler Myers and OT cost a W, keeps us in the Bedard dreams, at least. That's Lester calling in as well.
So, yeah, that plays a bit interesting to me. And a lot of people were texting with the Chaos Giraffe doing it again. I wonder if there's a miscommunication between him and Brock. I do think this is probably on Tyler Myers, but they both wind up taking Braden Schenn. And I just wonder if maybe one of them was supposed to shade towards Vrana.
I think so. I think that's probably what should have happened on that play. And just, you know, some of the breakdowns we saw tonight, which we haven't seen as much from the Canucks recently, but certainly there. William and Langley, people complaining that the Canucks are winning is awfully bad because it hurts the potential Bedard odds in the lottery is kind of pathetic. There's no guarantee they'd get Bedard even if they were at the bottom of the standings. That's why it's called a lottery. I want Bedard to be a Canuck as much as the next guy, but celebrating a loss is very pathetic. That's William and Langley calling it. I mean, texting it. I'm not going to get too upset with fans wanting losses and fans happy with the wins. Listen, there's no rule book for how you got a fan. I think a lot of fans want the same thing. They want the team to be successful long term. And it's hard to extrapolate long term success from an end of season run when you're not making the postseason. So that's where a lot of the skepticism comes in. But everyone wants the same thing. They want this team to be successful long term. And everyone wants the team to somehow find another star level player. And God, would it be great to get in the draft? And it would be Connor Bedard. I think everybody wants the same thing here. It's just, how do you end up getting there, and can you actually get there?
This one. Man, a lot of car flags text suddenly coming in. 650, 650. This one. I missed the car flags from Jeffro. I'm ready to get hurt again. Next year's our year, Marcus and Gibson's. 650, 650. I imagine there's some sentiment of that where after that Pedersen to Kuzmenko pass, man, that was...
That was beautiful.
That was freaky.
You know what I was thinking about? The last time we've seen that type of chemistry with two players, it was Henrik and Daniel Sedin, and before that, it was Bertuzzi and Naslund, right? Like, for two individual players to be able to pull off plays like this, and I'm not saying those guys are going to be able to do it as consistently. I mean, and the Sedins are a class of their own, right? I'm not trying to say it's that. But in terms of two star players, one center and a winger, really finding that 1-2 chemistry, like, we haven't seen guys do the things these guys are doing. Even when JT was playing with Pedersen, they had success as a line, but it wasn't like 1-2 chemistry. Besser and Pedersen had some chemistry, and that first year there were some moments, but it wasn't like this.
Plus, it was Pedersen still as a young player.
Yeah. This is like the how these guys are playing off of each other and how they're kind of dancing around guys in the offensive zone and making plays and reading off one another. Like, it's that level we're talking about here. We've seen it in Vancouver in the past, and that's kind of the stratosphere you might be somewhat getting close to if these guys can keep growing this.
If you heard the Beauvillier mic'd up, that I know aired on Sportsnet Pacific, but you can go check it on the Canucks social accounts. You know, even Pedersen joking, you know, Kuzmenko's always open.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that's a line that Kuzmenko delivers to Petey, but hey, there's a moment where he wasn't open, but he found him. And from Pedersen's point of view, like, that's where that sales pitch from Kuzmenko pays off. It's like, hey, if I'm heading towards the net, try to find me.
Yeah.
And Pedersen.
Pedersen can find guys, man. Pedersen,
that was an awesome pass.
It's an incredible pass. But just his overall confidence that he has, too. I mean, Pedersen had 2 points tonight, and there were so many incredible moments tonight from Pedersen. There was also some good moments from JT Miller as well. But the goal where they set up, it was Kuzmenko where Miller set him up net front, right, on the power play. The pass that Pedersen makes to JT Miller across seam is a pretty incredible pass, too. And then what he does is he dives right into that open space, draws all the defenders over to him, which opens up a lane for Andre Kuzmenko. And JT Miller, let's talk about JT for a second, Vic. And you turned to me when you saw the replay of that and JT Miller's eyes, and we just kind of laughed at
Scandella goal.
The Kuzmenko goal on the power play. You know, he takes the pass from Pedersen cross seam. You know, Pedersen goes into space, draws defenders to him, opens up Kuzmenko, and Miller is looking at Pedersen the whole time, and the defenders are reading that. And
all four defenders collapse on Pedersen.
And because they can see Miller's looking right at him, and then no looks it.
Every indicator of JT's posture, eyes, everything.
Stick, body position, everything.
Is looking right at Pedersen.
Yeah.
And four sticks, four bodies collapse on Pedersen. All it would take, and Scandella even like shoulder checks to see what JT's looking at, and he sees Pedersen coming into the slot. And so he leaves the stick there. And Kuzmenko just pivots, similar to what we saw PDG do this play. And Miller hit him, and PDG put it off the backhand and kind of chipped it over the goalie a few games back. He just twirls and pivots in the spot, presents a target, and Miller does this perfectly. And it looks like a quarterback kind of looking off the safety, where he's just keeping his eyes in one spot. Everyone's got to stay still, and this receiver comes across the face, and now that guy's open all of a sudden. It's the same thing. And the cameras did a great job picking it up on the replays. If you go back and watch, He is looking right at Pettersson and slips it in behind because Scandella doesn't move his stick to protect the goal line pass.
Yeah, it's like you're right. It's like a quarterback telegraphing a pass to the outside as an out, and then the crosser comes across and you just hit him when he gets into your eyesight. So it was a really incredible play. I mean, Pettersson, but JT Miller. And, you know, I know Torgi texted in, too, in this run that JT's on the past 20 games. He's up to 75 points on the season. This is the second best season JT Miller's had in his career now. Point production wise, 75 points. He's one goal away from hitting 30, which is likely going to happen as well. And just his playmaking and ability to really drive play, playing center too. There are a number of times in this game and even previous games where he's making those types of plays with elite playmaking at 5-on-5. It's not just he's just kind of gobbling up points on the power play like he's done much of the season. Like, that production and playmaking at 5-on-5 has really risen as well.
Yeah, and to be honest, I thought the best part of his game tonight was defensively.
Yeah.
And that's why I mentioned with Randeep, you know, he was on the ice for 4 Blues goals of the 6 tonight. But the Torpachenko one, you know, that one's on Brisebois.
Mm-hmm.
That pass to Miller.
Yeah.
Look, maybe he can blow up Torpachenko, whatever. I think that's harsh, but Torpachenko makes a great play. The next one that he was on the ice for was the first Jacob Vrana goal that we talked about. Well, that one has nothing to do with JT. A little bit, because we talked about in the intermission, maybe he calls for the pass. I'd be a bit skeptical, but, you know, that's Demko making a slow decision,
yeah.
Brock making not a great play, so that's not really on JT, and it's a bang-bang play. And then he's on for the power play goal, but he's mostly in the right spot. We talked about Oman and Brisebois in that spot, and maybe Demko's got to make a save. And then he's on for the overtime goal. So he's on for 4 goals, but to be honest, he's not really involved in any of the 4 plays. So I thought it was a good night for JT defensively, and he's going to end up as a dash one while he's making this progress to get to even, to be honest. If he didn't end minus one, I think there's a chance he gets to even. But now he goes to dash 6 on the year, but it's improved a great deal.
It has. There are a number of back checks where he came back and made plays on the guys going to receive the puck and the puck carrier, and you're seeing that effort level there from him as well defensively in the engagement. It is certainly there. All right, keep your thoughts coming in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. We'll take more of your reaction. We'll keep breaking this game down, and we are going to hear from head coach Rick Tocchet next as the Canucks Central postgame show rolls on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Back to more Canucks Central postgame show coverage. This is where you talk Canucks on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Miller gets it free to Joshua. Now to Besser, near circle, back to the line for Hughes. He scores! Teed it up for the top of the point, and the Canucks tie the game in the final minute of the third period. Quinn Hughes with the shot. It finds its way past Binnington. It's Hughes with his second of the hockey game, and the game is tied at 5.
Canucks lose in overtime, 6-5 against the Blues. And this is the Canucks Central postgame show on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar. You can grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, and we'll see if we get to the phone boards in a bit. But before we get to head coach Rick Tocchet, who we'll get to momentarily here, plus Quinn Hughes and story time with Cheech. That's all coming up. But first, Bick, what's popping on the Dunbar Lumber text inbox?
650-650, this one, 8 games to go, and we can enjoy some 5-on-5 hockey. Someone's ready for the playoffs. This one, Michael from Coquitlam. Brock desperately needs a change of scenery. The last 3 years of McGillney's time with the Canucks is very similar to Besser. You know there's a goal scorer there, but it just doesn't want to come out to play. Michael from Coquitlam, and this one, unsigned. Hey, boys, missed the game. Just tuning in. If you have already, please ignore it, but just curious how Joshua looked on the top line. We talked about it with Randeep a bit. You know, I think there was individual moments that Dakota Joshua had that didn't have necessarily anything to do with playing with Elias Pettersson or Andre Kuzmenko and just typical Dakota Joshua things. And it's unfair just because, like, one game, you got no chemistry with Pettersson. You're trying to figure out how to read the game. So I think he did fine, but I think all the things that he did well were independent of Elias Pettersson and Andre Kuzmenko. I don't know if they paired well together, but I want to keep seeing the experiment go on because one game's not enough to judge it upon.
I mean, was it a stretch to suggest they were the Canucks' best trio? Forward-wise, tonight?
Probably not. I mean, but that might be... Who would the next best trio be? The Miller line?
Probably Miller line, I'd say.
I mean, but again, we're talking about Besser.
Besser.
Yeah, having some struggles
having
tonight.
Struggles, but that's it. So I'd say, I mean, I didn't notice anything too bad. The thing I liked about Dakota Joshua's game, this is something we talked to Dan about earlier, and he said, can he be a good third guy on a top six line? And ultimately, I don't think so long term. Like, I don't see Dakota Joshua long term being
not
a
on
top
a championship
yes,
team.
And that's what I mean, right? But it's a great carrot to dangle in front of him and be like, if everything aligns for you, this is who you could be. This is who you could be.
I'm super excited to see what Dakota
For
Joshua
sure.
looks like next year. Stable footing. I've established myself now in the NHL. This organization likes me. They reward me. What type of work does he put in?
A lot. I mean, and you know what? And when you get this opportunity and you do well like you did tonight and you acquit yourself just fine, defensively good, getting impact, getting in there on the forecheck, winning puck battles, facilitating play, that means you were just fine. You were more than fine on that mm-hmm. line. And it's also a bit of an indication of you've graduated from being a depth player to an everyday fourth liner to an everyday third liner, and now you're getting a chance on the top line. And that's just the progression which he's kind of gone through. And now it's the conversation about Dakota Joshua from the organization's perspective, from the head coach, is like, okay, you can be a good third line guy. You can be even more now. This is what you can be. And that's how, you know, I would imagine how you want to drive somebody to that success. Not just say, boy, you've done a great job this year. Awesome. You're a third liner. You're going to be a third liner next year. It's more about keep dangling that carrot and keep motivating that guy to
get
be like,
reward.
Get higher and higher. Keep striving for it. But yeah, to answer the question, I was impressed with what I saw from Dakota Joshua yet again today.
He keeps stacking months.
Yeah.
That's the big thing. And you mentioned there someone who's improved and gone up the organizational depth chart. I honestly, like, you go through it, how many guys have done that this year? How many guys from where they started have graduated up the roster?
So would you say Kuzmenko graduated up his role? He's been playing with Pettersson the whole season pretty much, but he came into the season as somebody who
he started the season with Pettersson.
Yeah, but he has graduated a role into being a foundational piece.
Sure,
you could say that. Outside of that, outside of that, it's only Dakota Joshua. Like, who else do you look at and say everyday player now next season?
Or just improve their...
Well, PDG, you can say, goes from being
depth
guy now every now next year.
But again, we're still talking about a...
13 forward.
Ideally, like a 12-13 forward. And if he takes a step next year, then that's
fantastic
too. But realistically, like, okay, but Colson didn't do it. Studnicka, from when he came in, hasn't really done it. Brock certainly hasn't done it. Garland hasn't done it. Beauvillier comes into the middle of the season. Maybe that's someone we would have said, hey, that's a middle six winger, but now he's paired well with Elias Pettersson.
Now, Beauvillier, I think, is showing he can be a decent third guy on a top six line.
Right.
Because there's a real bottom line to his production as well, and has been so far this season.
But by and large, you know, there hasn't really been a lot. I guess maybe Christian Wolanin.
Yeah. I mean, those guys, I mean, Sheldon Dries, somebody texted in, but are we sure Sheldon Dries is making the team next season?
Full-time.
He has a contract for next year. He's played this year, but I think he falls into that category. But it's different levels, right? Like, look at Sheldon Dries, PDG. We're talking about guys that are kind of fighting for spots. Willannon, hey, they've gone up the roster, but are you penciling any of those guys into the roster next season? I don't think you are. The only guy you are, I think, is Dakota Joshua. Mm-hmm. Next year, Dakota Joshua has a spot on the team. Not to say anything's being handed to him, but I think next year the organization's probably looking at Sheldon Dries and saying, you better play well in camp. Probably looking at PDG saying, you better play well in camp. Same thing with Landon, same thing with those other guys. Whereas Dakota Joshua, perhaps part of something bigger if he can keep going the way he's going. Now, we mentioned the head coach, Rick Tocchet, who's been dangling success carrots in front of Dakota Joshua, who's been gobbling them up. And here is the head coach after the game, losing 6-5 in overtime.
Yeah. You know, the battle back, you know, obviously D-zone coverage early on wasn't good. But, you know, Quinn Hughes was a monster, and Millsy again. Those guys are playing their asses off for us. And, you know, they're leading.
I think Quinn's been a lot more direct here recently.
Yeah, I mean, he's just
assertive.
Very assertive. You know, just all facets of the game. You know, just I love his compete tonight. Even with 5-2, he was... You could tell the gleam in his eye, like he didn't think we were out of it. So, and obviously, he was the main reason why we got back into it.
A little loose in the first period, do you think?
Yeah, a couple of lines were very loose. You know, we were doing some uncharacteristic thing. Not a lot of, you know, we played a little light tonight. Some guys, and we weren't stopping starting on pucks. three and four, that's when you need your bottom six to really help you, you know, in your own end, win battles. And I thought we were in our end a little too much. A couple of our bottom six were in our end a little too much.
What did you think of the fit with Joshua on the top line?
I didn't mind him. Like, he has a presence, even the six on five, just him being around the net. You know, him and Giuseppe are giving us that kind of big body guy. They win some battles for us most nights.
So seems to be some good chemistry between Pettersson and Kuzmenko, especially on the fourth goal.
Yeah, that face-off play was, you know, obviously special. Yeah, those guys are producing for us every night.
Not a strong second period there.
Yeah. Even the first, our D-zone coverage wasn't good. But like I said, you know, we battled hard. There's about a bunch of guys that really battle hard for us in that third period. I went to three lines and got us back in the game.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet after the game, and mentioned Quinn Hughes leading the way and had that gleam in his eye. It seems like Tocchet is good at identifying gleams in eyes.
New Tocchetism just new mixtape just dropped. New Tocchetism just dropped. Gleam in his eye.
Gleam in his eye. Mentioned, especially about defensemen. He mentioned that about Oliver Ekman-Larsson, and now obviously too about Quinn Hughes, who was spectacular later in the game, creating and had some moments when we talked about it seemed fatigue, maybe a bit of an issue, but the Canucks did make a push late in that third period. And he mentioned the team played a bit light, not a lot of stop and start. Third and four nights maybe needed more from their bottom six. But you know who they took out of their bottom six that was good at stop and starts? Was Dakota Joshua. And, you know, it's, and I'm not saying take him off that role, but it's like he's really good at doing those things. And you take one of those guys out of the bottom six, it has an impact. And to the point that you made, Bick, he's one of those guys that this team doesn't have a ton of. And you see, you know, the tantalizing potential if it all comes together ideally, you know, playing up the lineup, but you also see what he can provide when he's not there down your lineup.
Should he be one of the guys that we talk about maybe they try to target in an early contract?
Okay, so what does that look like? If you're Dakota Joshua,
I just thought of this right now. I haven't looked it up. I haven't tried to come up with some comparables.
But Dakota Joshua is a guy who's obviously not made a lot of money in the NHL yet. Mm-hmm. Now, he signed a 2-year contract, over $800K this year and also next season. But he's, what, 26 years old?
Yeah, that sounds right.
What would you have to offer him for him to say yes?
He turns 27 in May.
Is it as simple as you offer him a little bit security, 2 years, $1 million and a bit? What if you double his salary?
I was going to say, like, hey, what if you get kind of creative with it?
But what if you double his salary, right? And that would be, what, $1.7 million per year?
Mm-hmm.
If you offer him a 2- or 3-year deal at $1.7 million per season, does he say no?
It's a lot of money.
For him, it is, because he hasn't made a lot of money. The other side of it, though, is, like the coach has been saying, a guy like you is rare. You have one more year like this. You set yourself up for free agency. Does somebody pay him over $2 million per year? Does it get a 3- or 4-year deal?
I'm going to – everyone, don't grab your phones and text in. I'm just going to use a name.
Or do. You can call. You can call and text and disagree with Dick. It's okay.
It's not even disagree. It's just why are you evoking that name, okay?
Uh-oh.
I'm just talking about age parallels, okay? Mm. But Alex Burrows signed a contract when he was 28 years old. Okay.
Oh, boy.
The 4 years, $2 million deal.
And he played. Okay. All right.
That's all I'm saying. Dakota Joshua, when his next contract would kick in, he'd be 28 years old. Do you go to the summer and say, hey, what? Dakota, does 4 years, $2 million appeal to you? Is that an idea?
Well, and here's the thing. So Burrow signed that 4-year deal after coming off a 3-year contract where he was making $500,000 a year. He signed a 3-year deal worth $1.5 million in total. This is when the minimum salary was $500,000.
And he just scored 28 goals.
And it was like he was making no money.
Yeah.
And the prospects of saying no to $8 million after making $1.5 over 3 years was very difficult. That's kind of what a guy like
Dakota. I'm not saying he's going to put up 30 goals.
No. But if you're Dakota Joshua, that's my question with Dakota Joshua. But honestly, this summer, I'm not touching $2 million for Dakota Joshua. If Dakota Joshua wants $2 million over 4 years, I'm not giving that to him yet.
But
I want to see somebody show that this is who you are. But I'm willing to take a bet. I'm willing to take a gamble if it's a bit more friendly.
I'm just using term as a comparable here. Now, he had scored 28 goals, so it's totally different context. But, man, there's a fun player here. And the other thing I really like, scarcity. Man, it is hard to find guys that are built in the profile of Dakota Joshua who play an all-around game. It is very difficult to find guys like this.
It is. It is. Marcus and Gibson says 4 times 2.25 for Joshua. So that would be, what, $7, $8, $9 million a year? $9 million total money, which isn't bad, right? That'd be $9 million. This text says $800,000 a year is not a lot. How many years does it take for you to make that? Well,
in the context of NHL contracts,
yeah,
it's not a lot of money.
Anytime we're talking about NHL salaries, it's all within the context of funny money and National Hockey League money. The minimum salary in the National Hockey League is $750,000. So he's making just a bit over minimum league minimum salary. That's a lot of money for sure. But it's, you know, the point being, when you're looking at millions upon millions of dollars, hey, 1.6 million total is a lot different from 8 to 9 million total. I don't care who you are, right? And that's kind of what we're talking about here in terms of, you know, the ranges of money.
But the reason I bring it up is, again, you are trying to make some bets here.
Mm-hmm.
And is this one that you can say, if we can get something in our third line, fourth line, and I really think he can be an elite fourth liner.
Yeah, like a high-level fourth liner. Yeah. Can he be somebody? And that's why, like, you know, to Brandon and Vancouver's points, we've seen a lot of guys get paid and get contracts, and they haven't lived up to
sure.
it. And that's why I'm not big on overspending, especially we've seen overspending on guys in the bottom six. Where I draw a difference potentially here is, to your point, he offers a scarcity that doesn't exist as prevalent, which isn't as prevalent in the NHL anymore, and that's the big player with size and some skill and can do some things for you. He's not a perfect player, but that type of player archetype doesn't exist as much anymore. So that's something that's a bit different about it. But I'm with you, like, in the sense of, if he can, again, if I can get him signed to 1.5 to 1.6 per year over 3 years or 2 years, I'm all for that.
Great text here, 650, 650. Better comp for Joshua. Again, I was just talking about contractual comps,
yes.
not physical, how they play on the ice comps. But this is a good one. Patrick Maroon.
Yeah, that's not a bad one. I mean, Patrick Maroon made a decent amount of money for a while, too. Had 27 goals 1 year.
Never hit the massive 20, contract, right?
Get a big contract. But that's the only time he hit 27 goals. Other than that, he's kind of been a 10, 11-goal guy, really, for his career. That's kind of where he's been at. But I don't think that's necessarily wrong. He's a better skater than Pat Maroon.
Actually, did he get a big contract in Edmonton? Or was that the one that he signed in Anaheim?
Well, he had a contract which was paying him a decent amount of money for a little bit.
Oh, you know what? 3 years, $2 million.
There you go, $6 million. Yeah, $2 million.
I thought he signed a big one in Edmonton.
There you go. Well, I guess, hey, like the texter said before, how much money are you guys making if you're saying $6 million is not a lot of money?
What?
No, I'm just joking. Just kidding. The texter texted it.
Oh,
yes. So if we're saying, you know, $2 million is not a lot of money, you know. Anyways, yes, he signed a 3-year contract worth $6 million. And that's kind of what you're looking at potentially if you want to get ahead of things. But something to consider with Dakota Joshua's play, of course. Keep your thoughts coming in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650, 650. We'll get to more of that as the show goes on here. But before we get to that, the coach mentioned Quinn Hughes, his defending, and how he really led the charge to bring the Canucks back in this one. And here is Quinn Hughes meeting with the media post-game.
Yeah, not our best, but found a way to get back in it, so gave ourselves a chance.
I say 2-2 after the first period. You had to feel good about that period.
I don't think we played that well in the first, to be honest, and didn't really play that well in the second either, so.
So you gave up 3 quick goals there, down by three.
For sure,
so.
Yeah.
What did you do in the third period to get back in the game?
I think, you know, we made some plays, and, guys, you know, some of the guys in here really don't want to lose, and, you know, we're just really pushing the pace, and you see Petey and Kuz making plays, and Millsy and Brock and these guys, and throughout Hronek and Mizey were pushing, and Oliver D, and, you know, left Demmer out to dry a bit in the first and second, but, you know, we pushed in the third, yeah.
2 power play goals tonight.
Yeah. Yep, so that was good, and, you know, power play's got to be good for us to, have success, and same with the penalty kill, and I think the penalty kill's been good, and the power play hasn't been where it usually is, so, it got us back in the game a bit.
So you guys have been playing pretty good coming into the nice game.
Yeah, 10-2 last 12 or something, right. But, yeah, just got to keep, you know, playing strong. I mean, yeah, they got a good team, and crowd's always good, but I think that we just got to play better. I mean, it's tough to play anywhere, to be honest with you.
That is Quinn Hughes after the Canucks lose 6-5 in a shootout. And, you know, mentions didn't like their first, didn't like their second, push hard to come back in the third period to tie things up and force overtime. But Quinn Hughes, three-point performance. This time he had 2 goals and 1 assist, something you don't often see from Quinn Hughes, up to 7 goals on the season and a cool 72 points, which is yet another club record for defenseman scoring in Canucks history.
72 is a cool number.
That's a nice number.
Shout out to Anthony Beauvillier.
Shouts to Anthony Beauvillier.
For wearing a cool number. Yeah, it was kind of an interesting game for Quinn. I think he's, you know, kind of correct there. The first two periods weren't exactly what we've seen here recently. And so, not that Quinn's always the most enthusiastic guy doing post-game media avails, but I think you're speaking a lot of truth there, that it seemed like there was some muted exuberance there. It's like, yeah, you know, 3 points is all well and good, but he's probably a bit more concerned about what they did in the first two periods.
Yeah, I mean, the first period was poor, right? And the coach mentioned they've played their third game in 4 nights, and maybe that plays a part into it. But regardless, it was the type of start that this team has been wanting to avoid, and it was only 2-2. And then in the second period, the beginning parts of the second, mistake after mistake after mistake, and next thing you knew, they were down 5-3, and, you know, they had to kind of storm back and come back in this one. But, you know, we look at Quinn Hughes and his overall production and his play. We talk about goal scoring being something for him, right? So he's got 7 goals on the season now. He has 26 for his career. He's gone 8-68, 3-56, 8-76, and now 7-70. Which tells you he can be a 10-goal scorer. How much more can he push that up? Tonight, maybe some bounces, right? The first goal is a bit of a, you know, break goes in. The second one, it deflects off somebody, goes in. He's not getting these clean looks and scoring and sniping. But for a guy who's now going to be a assist per game, really, that's the type of player that he is, if he can score like 12 goals, big.
Huge. And I think what Murph asked Tockett too is really telling, because he used the word direct. That's what I want to see from Quinn Hughes, because he's got the ability to go around anyone. Like, when he's stationary and someone's skating at him, he's getting around that person every single time. It's unreal to watch. Like, the Besser goal is created by Quinn Hughes dancing away from someone. It's magnificent. When he's skating downhill, I think he can go around 95% of the league.
Yeah.
And so if he's given the freedom with the D partner that can cover him, because he's always going to get back too. That's the other thing. If he gets a bit more freedom to, A, join the rush a bit more often, and B, be a bit more direct on the 5-on-5, half-court kind of offense, I think that's the way you can get 12. He's not going to get 12. He's not going to get 15 by bombing some shots away from the point. But can he start working towards the net? Then I think he can get 12. But we don't see him get to the middle of the ice probably enough in congested areas.
No, and one thing we did see too was him and Filip Hironi playing a lot late in the game. And something we talked about was like, hey, if the Canucks are trailing, you put those guys together. And they really did tilt the ice. Now, again, how much of that is score effect? And Hironi did look a little tired at times. This guy coming back from an injury, 3 games and 4 nights and everything.
Yeah, there was a text mentioning that as well. 650.
Yeah, and it's something that we did notice. It was a good thought by somebody coming in. But I thought when him and Quinn were together, and they played 10 minutes and 48 seconds at 5-on-5 together tonight. And when they did, Bick, they controlled the scoring chances at 100%, the high danger ones, 4-0. And the overall scoring chances were 66.67, and the expected goals, well, over 65% together. So that's just the analytics of those guys, and it's not a coincidence the Canucks came back into the game when you're generating and not giving anything up when those two guys are on the ice, because the puck's essentially in the other end the whole time. And anything that happens has been stuff from distance. Like, the chances were low dangerous chances, which means shots from relative distance and ease.
That's what you want to see. Mobility pushing guys out to distance, and you'll want Thatcher Demko to see those shots because he's going to turn those away every single time.
Yeah, absolutely. Keep your thoughts coming into the text inbox, 650-650. Dan and Brentwood, well, now it makes sense why you guys have been always having fun on the post-game shows, even when the team was abysmal to watch. Y'all getting that funny money, eh, boys? Radio stars, that's Dan and Brentwood texting.
Secure the bag.
Hey, like I've said.
Is the motto of the show.
I mean, honestly, today, yeah, it is. Listen, in any walk of life, here's a lesson. You have a chance to secure the bag. Secure your bag.
Do it.
Secure your bag.
That's why we're always pro player leverage, pro player mobility.
Listen, it's not always you have leverage.
Player empowerment.
It's not always in life and at work that you have leverage. If and when you have leverage, use it to your advantage. Always do. Listen, man, it's a hard world out there. Don't... Secure the bag when you can. That's all I'm going to say. Secure the bag when you can, because you don't get extra points for leaving money on the table. Let's just put it that way.
It's a pro bag show.
Yes, very much so. Very, very pro securing the bag here on this show. A lot of reaction and text coming in. This one says 3 years, $5.2 million in terms of a contract offer for Dakota Joshua.
Yeah,
so that would be...
Yeah, it's a bit of an exchange between myself and the texter here, because he said... Is Bick advocating for the Jay Beagle contract? And I thought he meant the one in Vancouver, the four-year, $3 million one. But he meant the one that he signed in Washington at a younger age, 3 years, 1.75.
Yeah, you know, if you can keep it under $2 million, because the reason I say under two, and honestly under 1.8, like 1.75 would kind of be my ceiling.
Let's just say under two.
Under two, right? Well, 1.7.
People don't want to multiply 1.8.
I know. But the reason I like 1.75 is if push comes to shove and this guy really struggles and it's not who you thought he was, it's only 600K on the cap if you bury the guy. I don't worry about that.
I don't think he's ever going to get to a stage where you have to bury him.
I don't, but that's what I'm saying. Because if you do have a guy making over two, again, all of a sudden you talk about $1 million you got to send down. Once you get that down a little bit, it just becomes manageable. To me, it's about risk. And if you have an owner willing to pay the money, your risk isn't the cash you're sending out. It's the cap charges that you're taking. Mm-hmm. And that's what I want to mitigate for a team that's had too many slightly higher cap charges, right? Like they kind of have to save every 100K, 50K where they can right now.
I get
that's kind of where they're at, right? But hey, I like what Dakota Joshua has done. Secure the bag, man. Get your money.
Frugal Shaw. I don't know.
I'll take it.
Buckshot approach, man.
I don't know about that. Michelle texted in and said, "Hey guys, I'm truly curious and would like to understand the excitement for the draft lottery chances. We have a team that is physically showing through structure their development. Why is it so much harder to see the potential of our team?" And then seeing the potential of a chance of a draft lottery pick seems a little weird. People get excited for the lottery chance, but fail to see a developing structure in our team at the end of the season. And I think there's a lot of truth there in terms of trying to buy into something tangible you're seeing versus something that's completely unopened. It's a gift. You don't know what it's like until you open it up. You don't know what's in it. If it is a really good gift, you're super happy. If not, you're super disappointed. You wish you kind of held on to whatever you had before. Like, I get that. But I think the biggest issue is just the lack of faith and believing this will translate for next year. Because I don't think any of the fans are saying we don't want to see improved hockey. It's the improved hockey we've seen in the past, which has led nowhere.
I'll make a dog reference since you're all
Ooh,
about that.
Yes.
Like, you know those videos that always go viral? Be like, this puppy or this dog at the shelter was scared to meet the new owners and stayed in the corner. I feel like that's what Canucks fans are right now. It's like, we've seen this, but they don't want to step out in the corner. And right now, Patrick Alvin and Jim Rutherford are just the new owner with the hamburger. They're like, come eat it, buddy. Come eat it. Come on. We're going to love you. We're trying to win. And they're just scared to creep out of that corner. And then you see the video go by. It's like 4 days passed and he didn't move when we brought him home. And then finally, it's like, now he's eating out of our hands. It's just... I understand Canucks fans just like creeping out of that corner, like, no, head down. Like, I don't want to do this.
I don't trust you guys before because I think I don't.
I'm not
going to
make dog whimpering sounds, but.
No, I know. But that's a little, yeah.
I feel like it's like that.
It does.
I'm not wrong.
Not necessarily wrong. No. Dan and Brentwood, if we ever see Bick or Sat suddenly depart 650 and turn up on another network, we know why.
I do the Leo thing, but I'm not going to.
I do it, but I'd lose leverage. No, just kidding. All right, we'll be back.
The show goes on.
We'll be back next. We are going to hear from Storytime, from John Garrett, Storytime with Cheech and Dan Murphy, plus Ian McIntyre, as the Canucks Central post-game show rolls on Sportsnet 650.
Now more of the Canucks Central post-game show, bringing you the most Canucks coverage in BC, only on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Into the near corner for Meyer, back to Kuzmenko, through all the ice for Pettersson. Left circle, in front, Kuzmenko scores! Wide open, what a pass from Pettersson to get it to him in the middle of the ice. And Andre Kuzmenko scores his second of the game to pull the Canucks to within one.
Canucks lose in overtime, 6-5 in St. Louis against the Blues, and this is the Canucks Central postgame show on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650, and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Satyar Shah with Bick Nazar, and keep your thoughts coming in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650, and we are going to be chatting with our good friend Ian McIntyre coming up in a few minutes' time. And we have a lot of reaction on the text inbox, and Marcus and Gibson's has been sending in some good ones. This one says, Kuzmenko and Petey go together like coffee and Chiba. Great! I like that. And he says, a lot of talk on the PDO cast about teams playing 11 forwards and 7D in a game. Roll a solid three lines and have the depth on the back end to deal with injuries and inconsistent play from game to game. Thoughts on carrying 11/7? That's Marcus and Gibson's. I think it's all situational. What I like is flexibility. Hey, if you have good enough players, you don't need to worry about doing that. It all comes down to what type of roster you have. One thing I do like about that is if you have a three-line team, essentially, depending on injuries, and you have some guys in the back end that are a bit inconsistent, you probably have more value running 7 and 11 than you do running 12 forwards and 60 and trying to force a guy in playing 2 or 3 minutes and really maybe lacking a little bit of depth. I think it's situational. I don't necessarily think it's a hard, fast rule, because a good hockey team is going to have three guys on a fourth line you want to keep intact.
Yeah, I'm pro trying new things. I wouldn't mind it, and there's certain things I'd like to see the league experiment with, and I know that Marcus texted that they were talking about that on the PDO cast. There might even be more value. Like, what do you think is more valuable, the 12th forward or the 7th D-man? Because I might say the 7th D-man.
It depends on the team. That's why I said it's situational. Yeah. Really depends, right? Like, if that's the case, then yes. But it all depends. But what I like is that those things being explored as more readily available options than it happens in the playoffs. Because you're going three lines, but you see it in the postseason more often when teams will draft 7D.
650-650. Pete in Surrey texting in. Best thing that can happen is if the Canucks regularly lose now with Besser, Garland, and Miller scoring regularly as to increase their trade value for potential draft week trades.
Yeah.
Team still needs defensemen and bottom six forwards.
And you know what? I mean, that's the optimistic outlook is that, right? Like, you use the players' improved play to your benefit when you're looking at making moves. And you know, when we had these discussions, people also get up in arms about, like, hey, why do you guys want to trade everybody? It's like, it's not just about that. But this team needs to make some moves. And if you want to look at it positively too, well, players' values are improving. And a guy that keeps being mentioned in that is Brock Besser. Although, has his play actually improved? He had a 3-point game tonight. And we said his game is pretty much a microcosm of a season. Some
counting
good,
stats.
Some bad, right?
Again, look, he's going to hit. He's over 50 points now.
Right. But who I think has really improved is Connor Garland. I think his game's been more consistent. Mm-hmm. His game's been a lot better, right? I think Anthony Beauvillier has been really good. I think those guys, if you're looking at truly maybe improving their value, at one point in the season, people talked about Connor Garland getting bought out. He has 40 points now. 40-point players making $5 million don't get bought out who are under 27.
He's on track to basically meet his contractual value.
Yeah. And he's not getting a ton of power play time, right? And given his points per 60, which is also impressive, these are positive things, I think, organizationally. Now, what do they do with that? Do they make them bigger parts of the future, Beauvillier and Garland, or do they capitalize on their increased value potentially and Those are decisions the team has to make. Jay in Poco says, this team can't even lose properly. If this success doesn't translate over to next year, this fan base will snap.
You might not be wrong. You might not be wrong.
Hey, I know. Even the fans are like, I believe this time. It's like, please be right. Please.
Telling you, they're the abandoned dog at the shelter.
Yes, they are. But please bring them back. Don't abandon dogs at the shelter, by the way.
I'm just saying it happens.
Yeah,
but don't.
Happen.
Yes.
Don't. I mean, you know what? If you get a dog, know what you're getting into. That's all I'll say. I'll leave it at that. I've seen some things.
Don't
recently.
Get sad on off
don't
on a dog rant.
No, you got me going on it. This
I know,
time. It's your
but,
fault.
Yeah.
All right. Anyways,
I didn't make an analogy.
You know what an analogy to make to? Now I'm heartbroken. Anyways, we'll get to.
What do you think Canucks fans are like?
So you want me to sound just like Canucks fans? All right. Well, we'll get back to more of your text messages, and we are going to get to Ian McIntyre coming up in a few minutes' time. But we mentioned story time with John Garrett and with Dan Murphy. And somebody texted in and said, is that the last overtime game that John Garrett's going to call for the Canucks? I mean, hey, there's still a bunch
of games.
I don't
want to make predictions like that.
I don't want to. But
let's just keep living in a world where Cheech is calling games.
And he is going to call games. For the rest of the season, a regional Canucks broadcast, and we're taking advantage of it by hearing all the stories he can share in another edition of Storytime with Cheech right here on Sportsnet 650.
All right, here with Mr. John Garrett. And before we get to the story time, yes. I don't know if we'll be on camera again, so I want to say this to people at home. This man right here, one of the most generous, one of the most genuine, one of the most kind,
well,
selfless, and funny
you.
People out there.
Thank
20
you.
Years
thank
I've known
you.
Him.
Oh, my
I've
God.
I've never seen him in bad mood more than once, and that was a little five-minute snit.
Yeah.
I'd say, what, 2,000 days on the road together over the years, John?
Yes, it has
and
been
you've always made it a
lot.
Blast.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Yes.
Although you took a couple years off my life with your dining establishments. Now let's go back to making fun of each other.
Yes. Yeah.
Tell me about the time that a Jumbotron put a dent in your goals against
average.
Oh,
I know. Landover, Maryland. And this is back in the day when not all the rinks had Jumbotrons. It was one of the very first in Washington, D.C. And it was out in Landover, Maryland. And you can see the size of it. You see the Jumbotrons now. So I'm playing, and it's a 2-on-2 coming in. And all of a sudden, it ends up 2-on-1 and it ends up in the net. And I'm thinking, what happened? And I'm watching the Jumbotron, and sure enough, this Alan Hangslaven, who is one of our defensemen, he changes for no reason. It was a 2-on-2, and he changed. It was 2-on-1, they scored. Well, anyway, Don Blackburn is the coach at the time, and a great guy, just passed away in the last 6 months. Really a nice guy, one of the nicest coaches I ever played for. Gives me the hook. He goes, John, you can watch the rest of the game. You sit right down there at the end of the bench, and you can watch the Jumbotron and watch the rest of the game. And it was only 3-2 or something at the time. It wasn't like I'd let in 8.
You can't be watching the Jumbotron.
I know. It was just...
Well, the next story includes the same coach.
Same
does
coach.
It not?
Same
were,
coach.
You were pulled basically from the stands.
Another one of those unique buildings, the old Boston Garden. The coaches, and there's Jack Kelly. Jack Kelly is David E. Kelly's dad. Involved in Boston University and all that. And then he became general manager of the Hartford Whalers. And he is sitting there in the old Boston Garden. The general managers had a perch just on the first concourse. And it was out almost over the ice. It was right even with the boards. And so I'm starting and not playing very well. Three of the first five went in or something like that. And I can just hear Jack screaming. And he's almost in my ear. Blackie. Get Cheech out of there. He can't stop anything. And sure enough, Don, the GM's yelling at him, and we all could hear him. Jack, you're giving me the hook. And yeah, he did. He got me out of there in that game. And his New England accent, too. It was great.
You've had some colorful teammates, Mike Walton being one of them.
Oh, there's more shaky stories, and we just don't have the time to get into all of them. But we're playing in Winnipeg, and we didn't beat the Jets very often. The Hall, Hedberg, Nielsen, the Jets were perennial AFCO Cup candidates, and we beat them one night, so everybody celebrates. And then the next day we had to practice at St. James Rec Center in Winnipeg, and we dressed at the rink and we got our skate guards on and everything, and Shakey still wound up. We finished practice, we go off the ice, and we're walking to the bus, and you have to walk beside the indoor pool that they have at the St. James. People, Patty O'Neill was reminding me about where it was. And sure enough, he just goes off the diving board with his skates on and into the pool. And he thinks, oh, this is hilarious. But now he's weighted down by all his hockey equipment, and he can't get up, and we're watching him, and he's flailing away, and he's going back under. So there's a big hook at the side of the pool, and a couple of the guys go over and get the hook, and we're hooking Shaky out of the pool. Don Niederkorner was our trainer, and Don, you got to have my equipment dry by the time we get to the next city.
Well, it's been fun. Maybe we can get one more in. We're on the next road trip because I know this is the anniversary of you fighting Mary Lemieux and telling him he was never going to
make it. He'll never make it. We get into American League stories, too. My wife making me sandwiches for the Richmond to Rochester bus rides, and I could have sold them. I could have made more money than I was making playing, selling my sandwiches.
Maybe we'll do it again, but if not, this has been fun. John Garrett, story time with Cheech.
That is John Garrett and Dan Murphy, and we're promising to get you as much Cheech content as possible. And if you miss a TV broadcast, and that's what you missed, then we'll look forward to more editions of Storytime with Cheech. And we are going to get to Ian McIntyre coming up in a few minutes' time. But, Bick, getting back in on this Canucks game and also on some reaction, which we will in a second, one player who's been asked about a little bit too is Vitaly Kravtsov. And there are some comments about Kravtsov's play. People are not exactly sold on what he can do. But it's also very evident, just by watching him, that he's still very much a project. He clearly has some tools. Mm-hmm. He clearly has the size. There is something intriguing there. But there's a lot of work to be done before he even gets there. And it's a question of, for me, one simple thing. How badly does he want to be an NHL player? Because the amount of work he's going to have to do to be the type of impact player is a lot. And is he ready to do that?
So I would say prior to arriving in Vancouver, the ball was in everyone else's court to see what Vitaly Kravtsov was. It didn't cost much to acquire him. It just meant someone had to take the conviction to do it.
Yes.
It was the Vancouver Canucks. And so now, if you want to maximize your NHL career or have an NHL career, the ball is now in Vitaly Kravtsov's court. You got out of New York. Your opportunity has arrived. He's shown flashes, which for me is enough. Like, you showed the flashes.
That's all you could really expect was because what is the potential we're working with here?
Because there have been games. The San Jose one is the shift that sticks out in my head the most.
Yeah.
He's not ready, like, from a physical standpoint. He's not ready to play 14 minutes. He's not ready to play 13 minutes. He gets tired. And look, I'm not pinning that on him. You're on the shelf in the Rangers. I get it. You came here. You've shown flashes. I'm intrigued. But now it's upon you to put in the work this summer and come back and say, this is what I can do now. I've followed your training regimen, we hope. Coming to training camp ready. This is what I can do. So I'm willing to delay the evaluation process till September, till training camp, because he's intrigued me enough.
Yes.
But let's not kid ourselves and say that there isn't work to be done.
I think the Canucks are going to sign him to a contract, and I think he's willing to sign another contract. And it's going to be like he's making 800 something now, something along the same lines, maybe 900K or whatever. But if he fails to make the team out of camp, or let's say things don't go his way and he has a tough year, it wouldn't shock me that he pulls a shoot and they mutually agree to terminate and he goes to Russia. This has happened in the past. It happened with the Canucks and Alex Burmistrov.
Right.
And these are circumstances where teams can mutually agree, especially smaller contracts mm-hmm. like this that are, you know, closer to, you know, under $1 million or whatever. There's that pathway. So I think he's signing a contract. But I think if things go awry, there may be an understanding of we'll let you leave if you want to leave type of deal, right? But the way I view Kravtsov is, man, he's going to need 2 years. Like, I look at him, and I don't mean 2 years to be a star player. I mean 2 years to be a guy you can play every day and play, like, 15 minutes a game. Some nights, maybe throw him 17 minutes a game. And that is going to take a great amount of discipline from him, a great amount of dedication from him, and a lot of mental toughness to go through that, because there's going to be some love-hate with Tocchet. I think now, to your point, at end of the season for Vancouver, they're taking a flyer on this guy. Let's see what they're doing. Absolutely, it makes sense. But when the stakes are there next season, Kravtsov's not going to be given anything. And the coach, even if he plays well for 7-8 games, he has one bad one, he's going to hear it. Not going to play, maybe. How is he going to handle that? And if he can't handle those things and he puts the work in for a couple of years, Bick, I think he might turn into something pretty good and exciting potentially. But that's my question, because he's not a short-term project. He's a long-term project.
And don't get it twisted. Like, the Canucks are doing this for the reward.
Yes.
If he changes his game and he wants to be like a third, fourth liner and dedicated to the defensive side of the game, okay, I'd be shocked. But the Canucks are doing this for the reward of what Vitali Kravtsov can be.
Because we're talking about tops. Like, you're not trying to turn him into a grinder. We're literally saying, can you be a star player? Can you be in a scoring role?
Yes. And when you struggle in some other parts of the game and you're not producing, that becomes a problem.
Mm-hmm.
The trait, like his drag that he did today to get that shot off, and the shot looks good. I'm intrigued, but you're right. He's got to put a lot of work in.
Yeah, I hope he does.
Conditioning, like conditioning is the baseline.
Yeah. Oh, that's just the base. Then the strength, and then it's also understanding and willingness and toughness to handle these things and playing through pain and playing through the challenges of an NHL season. All those things, because everything that I've seen from him so far, and hey, none of us know what happened behind the scenes with the Rangers, but I don't think the Rangers did anything wrong in terms of viewing him as like, you're not ready yet, kid. And if he wants to be ready, like, I think they were right in saying he's not ready.
And I'm, again, when we're talking about pro player mobility, pro player empowerment, if you want to be the player that you think you are, go ahead. But every team is going to ask themselves, to what extent do I have to participate in your identity?
Right.
And if Vitali Kravtsov wants to be the drag it, flashy, score goals guy, okay, but then you have to produce a certain level that the team says, I'll participate in your identity.
Yes.
And right now he's not.
Yeah. If he gets there, though, can be exciting, but a lot of work to do until he gets to that stage. But now let's welcome in our closer, the man we call the triple threat. You see him on TV, you hear him on radio, you read him on digital, and he is Ian McIntyre. What's going on?
Well, I didn't hear the music. Was it playing?
It was playing. It just got faded out a little bit. It's fine. It was there. We heard you.
All right.
Yes.
I wasn't sure. I was going to, blurt something out, but I didn't want to waste it if I wasn't even on the air. So
there are no wasted McIntyre words.
There are many. There are many. Just ask my copy editors.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was last week John Garrett decided to sing on the post on Canucks Central, so maybe tonight if Ian McIntyre decided to... No, McIntyre closed the door. Did you close the door to get ready to sing for us?
No.
No, okay.
No, I told you guys I will sing when they win the Stanley Cup.
Oh, right.
So I've got a long time to practice, I think.
No, you've had a long time to practice.
Hopefully,
you don't have much more time.
In fact, my singing chops are probably past their prime waiting for this team to win a Stanley Cup. Interesting discussion about Kravtsov, because obviously when he was with the Rangers, and I also don't know exactly what went on, but obviously with his... with his sojourn back to the KHL in his second season, if he wasn't going to play in the NHL lineup, clearly he would rather just go home. And he is a restricted free agent this summer. Rick Tocchet said last week that he thinks this is a really important summer for Kravtsov, and that if he has 4 good months of training, he could be a good player for the Canucks next season. The question is, is he willing to put in that training to be a Canuck next season without any guarantees? And the word I get when I ask about this is that, obviously Dan Milstein, the agent, has a very good relationship with Patrick Alvin, the GM. Milstein steered another client to them this week out of college. And the Canucks' expectation is that yes, that they'll sign another deal with Kravtsov, and he'll be back for at least another chance to show next season. But that remains to be seen. He certainly has to show something. We can see he has all the skills plus some size that you would expect of a forward drafted 9th overall, but he hasn't figured out, either with the Rangers or with the Canucks, the thing that every player in the NHL has to have, whether you're Elias Pettersson or Phil DiGiuseppe, you have to have a bottom line. You have to do something that's going to help the team win and do it better than enough other people that you can be in the lineup. And I think right now Kravtsov is still trying to figure out what that something is that he can offer that's going to help the team win.
What do you think of Dakota Joshua's step into the limelight on the first line?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's been in the limelight already. He hasn't just hasn't been on the first line. I think he's had some really good moments, and even on this road trip, you know, key moments in Chicago with the hit, and then the awareness and discipline. Key moments in Dallas with the shorthanded goal, and then he's had good moments recently at home as well, including the last game against the San Jose Sharks. I think, you know, when you look at his ice time, which I just did, it's a little bit up and down. You know, he's one of those guys that Tocchet rewards at times and then reins in at times because he's not as happy with what Dakota Joshua is doing. And I spoke to him briefly after the last home game, and he said it's the best he's felt as a pro, and it's not a big sample, four seasons and not a whole lot of it at the NHL level, certainly not before this year. But he said himself, the key is consistency and trying to do it every night. And I think what we're seeing with Dakota Joshua is he's becoming a little more consistent night by night. I don't think it's a long-term thing with him on the first line, but I thought he handled himself well. I thought it was really interesting at the end of the game who were the fifth forwards that Tocchet had out on successive shifts when it was 6-on-5 and they were pressing for the tying goal. He had DiGiuseppe out with his big four forwards plus Hughes, and then he had Dakota Joshua out, and Joshua, of course, was headed to the net and taking the defender with him when Quinn Hughes shot the puck in to tie the game. So a good night for him, and it's been, you know, for the most part, it's been a good 9 weeks for him since Tocchet took over. I think he's taken a huge leap forward in his game.
We were talking earlier, and obviously we spent so much time talking about the offseason and things the Canucks can do, like signing an Elias Pettersson or signing a Filip Hronek. Should Joshua's name be part of that mix too, that maybe they try to make a bet on this guy? And if the baseline is going to be a good fourth liner, do they try to maybe make a bet on him as well?
Maybe they do, but I think they need to be careful and they need to be realistic. And I think Joshua would be realistic as well about, you know, where he's at and what he can command. This team can't, you know, it's so much of our discussion, as you guys know, is about their salary cap and what they can do. What options do they have to get out of a couple of really poor contracts? And yeah, if you're talking about making a bet on a guy, certainly on your fourth line or even in your bottom six, that's not going to cost you as much as a bet on someone that you think is going to be a first liner. But it's still a bet and it's still a risk. And I don't think that's a necessary risk at this point. I think they can get him re-signed for a good number when the time comes, and hopefully he continues to develop.
Yeah, and you know, when we talk about players improving next season, he's a guy that's certainly on the mark for that. And we've spoken a lot about obviously Andrei Kuzmenko, and we spoke about Vitaly Kravtsov. But then, you know, we see moments like Quinn Hughes tonight. He had two goals, albeit, you know, one shot he kind of deflects and goes in. The first one, you know, he's in the right spot. But he has two goals, has an assist, takes over the game in the third. We've seen Elias Pettersson do these things. I mean, these guys are incredible as it is, but they're still very young players, Ian. Like, how much better can these guys even get for next year and in the year beyond, and with the growth we're seeing, especially as the year is going on, as the season is even going on here?
Yeah, well, they should both continue to get better, but I think the we've seen Pettersson get better year over year, and we've seen him just play at another level this season, and he's better now at the end towards the end of the season than he was at the beginning. So he's continuing to get better. I'm not sure how good or how much better he can actually be, because he's in rarefied air now. Like, Pettersson's one of the 10 best players in the game right now. I think the real growth area is for Quinn Hughes, and it's not because Quinn hasn't shown almost from the time he got here in Vancouver that he can be an elite creator of offense from the blue line. In fact, easily the best, most dangerous offensive defenseman that they've had. But there is so much area in his game to grow in terms of the defensive part, and not just sort of defending, but the whole 200-foot game. Like, you know, knowing when to go and when to not and when to take risk, when not. And I think in that area, he's been incredible in his development in the second half of this season. I think he made some strides last year that a lot of people didn't notice, but it's hard not to notice how often now he just tilts the ice when he's on it. And, you know, the best way to defend is to have the puck and be in the other team's end, and that's what the Canucks have so often with Hughes. But when the other team does have it, I think he's been much better, much more adept at understanding how to defend, how to use the strengths that he has. But tonight, you know, the high danger chances were 8-1 for the Canucks at 5-5 when Hughes was on the ice. I think the overall scoring chances were 24-11. The guy is now, what is he, plus 17 on a team that's been outscored by 19 goals at 5-on-5 this year. By a lot of measures, he's not only one of the best offensive defensemen in this league, he's now one of the best defensemen in this league. I don't, again, and as I've said before, I don't think he gets the love he deserves outside of the market. But if he keeps playing this way, eventually, for what it's worth, and he says he doesn't care because he knows how well he's playing, mm-hmm. but for what it's worth, other people are going to start to notice just how good this guy is.
Yeah, I mean, he's been sensational. Elias Pettersson just keeps going up the scoring leaders chart in the National Hockey League. I mean, might even finish as a top five scorer before the season is over, and just shows you how much more these guys, I mean, how great they have been. Ian, great stuff as always here on the post-game show. We're getting towards the end of the season. We have eight more of these to go, and the Canucks have a five-game homestand to close out their home schedule coming up starting on Friday. So we look forward for that when the Canucks host the Calgary Flames.
Well, I'll look forward to being with you guys in person
yes.
for the next five games. I hope.
Yes.
I hope, unless yes. this writing gig gets in the way of the radio gig.
Well, yeah, sometimes that happens. And given how this season has gone, it's not a so insignificant chance that something happens between now and the end of the year. But obviously, we look forward to reading your latest on sportsnet.ca and chatting with you again very soon. Thanks, Ian.
All right, guys. Good night.
You got it. Good night. That's Ian McIntyre. Thanks for everybody listening here as well on the post-game show. Bick is back on the People Show tomorrow, 3 to 4.
No? Israel Fair filling in for Bick.
Oh, Bick's away tomorrow.
Yeah.
All right, nice. Bick has a day off. He's earned a day off. He's been working a lot.
I'm securing the days off.
Securing the days off. There's no bag in the day. All right. Special thanks to Ben Bastron, our producer, doing a heck of a job behind the boards. And thanks to all of you for listening and being part of the postgame show. As always, look forward to being back. I'm on Canuck Central with Dan Riccio tomorrow, 4 to 6. And we have Kevin Woodley plus Overrated Underrated right here on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.